The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 122 for Wednesday, October 29th, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather to get together. We gather and get together at the same time. It's the same thing. It's kind of redundant. So my redundant friends and I get together to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Back once again, Mr. Lou Page.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty good. I apologize. I know you were looking for a guest host a couple weeks ago. I had the flu.
Oh, dude, that's fine.
I just got over it.
You were sick the whole week and a half?
I was sick for about a week.
Oh, that's
rough. And I dragged myself into work, and now several people at the office are sick, and now they blame me.
Yeah, I've been using public transit a lot here in the city, more so than usual. I wash my hands like a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's crazy people on the bus with me, and I don't want their germs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I walk to work, so.
That's right, because you live really close to where you work, don't you?
I do. I can throw a rock from my front door and hit my work building.
That's kind of good. I'm not sure if I'd want to be that close to work. I mean, I work from home, so there is that.
Right.
But, I still have it separated. Like, it's a separate room. It's a separate space, separate headspace. Mm-hmm. For what I'm doing. I've been close before. Years and years ago when I worked at an animation studio, I was only about a 15-minute walk. And that was departure enough.
It worked out great for me this week. When we have clients in, normally we don't have to dress up. You can wear jeans and a t-shirt or whatever.
Right on.
But if we have clients in town, you have to dress up. And this week, Monday, was a dress-up day, and I forgot to dress up. And I got an email from my boss, and she was like, just so you know, I don't think you read the memo. Today was a dress-up day. And I was like, oh, I'll be back in 5.
Nice.
And she was like, oh, I forgot. You live across the street almost. And I'm like, yep.
Nice. It's almost like you got to do the Mad Men thing and keep like a shirt and tie in a drawer.
I actually, before I lived this close, I used to keep a crappy pair of dress pants and a dress shirt in my drawer in case I forgot.
Yeah.
They were a little beat up. They weren't like my, they were like on the verge of ending up having to go to Goodwill. I'm like, it's better than nothing. If I ever forget, I can just dig it out of the drawer.
So you look like a homeless dressed up person?
Yes.
Way to impress the clients.
I work in the back corner. Nobody ever sees me.
Nice. Well, are you excited for Halloween? I mean, every time we have you on the show, ultimately zombies come up at some point, but this must be like, you know, heyday. For you guys over at Zombies Ate My Podcast.
It is. I've added a lot of Halloween related stuff to the notes tonight, in case you haven't noticed. But my big thing is, I'm not going to be in town for Halloween.
Oh, no.
I'm going to Boston for Halloween. There is a one night only show where actor Jeffrey Combs is playing Edgar Allan Poe in a one-man show.
Oh, wow.
And you would know Jeffrey Combs if you've ever watched the zombie films Reanimator. Hmm. He is the lead in them. He plays, I'm trying to think of the character's name. It's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story.
Okay.
But he plays the lead, basically, that makes the zombies. And he's sort of like the hero / anti-hero of the movies. Hmm. And he's also been on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He's had several reoccurring roles on Star Trek series and stuff. And he's done this show in California, but the city of Boston got him to do one night only in Boston.
That's awesome.
They're doing a new Edgar Allan Poe bust that's being unveiled in the Boston Library this weekend as well. And that's what this is. This show is a celebration for.
Yeah. He's going to be fantastic. I looked him up while you were talking. And what I know him from and what people will recognize him from immediately is his voice.
Yes.
So he was in Transformers Prime and he played Ratchet.
Yes.
Who is the old medic on the Transformers on the Autobot side. He was also in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I think was a cartoon.
Yep.
Played the Rat King.
He's also in Avengers. He plays he's the voice for the bad guy, the leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the cartoon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a very distinct voice. And thinking of what I know about Edgar Allan Poe, which is not a lot, but enough to kind of, you know, common pop culture knowledge, he would have a very creepy delivery.
Yep.
Like I could see it being a very unique experience.
If you go to his actual website, which I can't think of offhand, it's probably something like jeffreycombs.com or something.
Mm-hmm.
He has clips of his previous performances as Edgar Allan Poe, and it's really, really creepy, and they do a really good job with his makeup.
Nice.
So these tickets went on sale like 6 months ago, and I jumped on it. And I was like, well, I know what I'm doing for Halloween.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really unique way to celebrate Halloween.
Yes, definitely. It was that or sit home and give out candy to trick-or-treaters. And I was like, nah, that doesn't sound like fun.
I was teasing Brian Dunaway on Comics Coast to Coast last week about how Canadian holidays are different. And for a blink, I almost had him convinced that we do Halloween on a different day. So, yeah, I said we did it on the 29th, which is tonight. And so then he started teasing me on Twitter, obviously, because he was, you know, I was giving him a hard time on the show. So he decided to throw some back. And one of the other guys, it was either Matt or Andy, I can't remember who, had mentioned something else and saying that they didn't want to hand out trick-or-treaters at the border. So if any Canadians come across, then they're going to get a trick, not a treat. And so I said, hey, just as well, if any Americans come trick-or-treating to Canada, I'm going to put moose jerky in their bag. I thought that was pretty funny. I don't, obviously, you know, we don't do Halloween on a different day. But I'm not a big Halloween guy. I mean, I've enjoyed it. I've certainly gone to Halloween parties, you know, when I've been invited. But I just, it's a lot of effort to dress up. Like,
yes.
I would much rather buy or rent a cool costume than make one, because I'm a perfectionist. And if I'm going to make one, I want to be like Punished Props Bill Duran good if I'm going to make my own costume. You know, like cosplay good.
I have a best friend who goes to Salem every year for Halloween. He gets up at 2 a.m, drives down to Salem, Massachusetts from Maine. It's like a 2-hour drive. He has to find a parking spot, and then he drives back 2 a.m. the next day. And wow. I'm like, and he gets all dressed up, him and his wife, and they fill a car full of people. And I'm like, that just does not sound like a fun idea to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I enjoy, like, sometimes clever costumes and comfortable costumes. That's the other thing, is that I don't often feel comfortable in whatever costume I've managed to mm-hmm. put together. We did some stuff in university where some of the guys in the residence would get together and go as like a team, you know, like we'd Army Rangers or just something fun, right? One of the guys would be in the reserves and they'd have like the camo paint and a couple extra bits of gear. And so we'd all dress in black and that kind of stuff. And it was okay. But it really doesn't look like much when you're the five of you aren't standing together, you know? And I mean, I've done some clever things before. I went to a party 10 or 12 years ago and I had a black t-shirt and I just safety pinned a bunch of stuff like socks and lint and went as Static Cling, you know? And that's people like, okay, all right, cartoonist, you get the eye roll, but that's the one time you get to do that. Like you kind of played that card.
Yeah.
So, and I've done the old Superman shirt under a shirt and tie with glasses before.
A couple years ago, I have another friend who does a costume party every year. And we went last year and I bought a trench coat at like the Goodwill for like $5. And I'm a very tiny guy. So trench coats look awful on me. And so I got that, and I got out one of my fedoras that I have, and I went as like a private investigator.
Nice.
And my wife dressed up like she was from like the 40s too, so we looked like we were film noir. And everybody, I wasn't through the door 5 minutes, and somebody went, "Oh, you went as Inspector Gadget," and I went, "Great.
Oh.
This is wonderful. This is really what I was going for."
Yeah, what you should have done was find a Ninja Turtle mask and gone as one of the turtles from the original Jim Henson Muppet movie thing that they did back in the 90s.
That would have been fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, because I think it was Raphael that was walking around the streets as with like a fedora and a trench coat on.
Yep.
Yeah, shadow boxing in the alley. Like, oh God, the memories that stick with you from movies like that as a kid are just kind of nuts. If you had an opportunity to be just like anything for Halloween, like no, sky's the limit, you know, either someone's making the costume for you or whatever, like what would you want to be?
I have no idea. That's a hard one for me. I'd love to go as a zombie. I have gone as Sean from Shaun of the Dead before, right down to the bat and everything.
Nice. Very, very cool. For me, it's always, I've always wanted to try something really elaborate like Star Wars, Darth Vader, Stormtrooper, something that just looks really, really authentic. I mean, I realize that people usually buy those and it's not like you're making your own costume, but I think it's really, really cool. When you look that professional, like in, like when the costume looks that good, you tend to turn heads. I really like the red, I think it's the red Imperial Guard costume.
Oh, yeah.
From like the Emperor's Throne Room. That is something you don't see very often. I think a couple years ago at Halcon here in the city, somebody had one, and like they were the only one in the con. There's a couple Stormtroopers, different variations of Boba Fett here and there. I think I might have seen one Darth Vader, but the Imperial Guard costume was just looming and intimidating. Like it was very, very cool. I'm not sure how they saw out of it. I'm not sure what the visibility was like, but it looked really neat.
There's always, I go to PAX East in Boston almost every year, and there's always somebody in one of those Imperial Guard costumes, and there's at least usually two or three Stormtroopers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Stormtrooper thing is a classic. It's a classic look. I mean, just to look at somebody else in the crowd, kind of cock your head sideways and just knock, do like a knock-knock on the side of the helmet, like you'd get so many laughs from people that just say like, oh, okay, you're like, I'm totally in on that joke, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And
of...
those Stormtrooper costumes are not cheap either.
No, they're like $500 or $600.
Yeah, I know a guy who's a member of the 501st official Star Wars cosplay as Stormtroopers group.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh no, I have to spend a fortune in cleaning my costume every year. And if I show up to the meetings and I don't wear, my costume isn't clean, like they ridicule you. And I'm like, wow, I really, I don't have the effort.
Yeah.
It's just not in me.
Oh, I mean, I'd like to own one and I'd wear it for Halloween, but I don't know if I'd join a club where I have to have it inspected. That's pushing even my nerddom a little bit far. There was something I was going to ask about the Stormtrooper thing, and I can't remember what it was now. I guess at cons, they always have to have like the little orange bits on the end of the blaster.
Yes.
And that always kind of throws
me
a little bit.
And actually, at PAX, they put before you come in with your weapon has to go to an area where they weapons check you.
Yeah.
And they put an orange strip of tape or an orange zip tie on your weapon so that they know that you've been checked.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. You know, when you're dealing with that many people in an enclosed space, like I completely understand why they'd have to do that. But yeah. So I guess we can move on to what we've been watching over the last little while. It's been a couple weeks since you've been on the show. So why don't you go first? What's been on the boob tube?
I've been watching, I almost brought this up the last time I was on. I've been watching a show called Forever. It's on ABC. And unfortunately, it's on the verge of getting canceled.
Oh, that sucks.
So I'm continuing to watch in hopes that maybe more people will watch. But the basic idea is there's a guy in New York City who is a coroner for the New York City Police Department, and he has a deep secret. He's about 250 years old.
Interesting.
And the premise is he was on he was trying to get over from England, and he bought himself aboard a slave ship that was coming over from Africa. And he was a doctor. That was how he was paying for his trip to America.
Right.
And they wanted him to treat a slave. And he said that it was a cold. And they said, no, he has the plague. He's going to kill everybody. And they wanted him to kick the slave off the boat. And he refused to do it. And so the captain of the ship shoots him and the slave and throws them both over the side. And he wakes up, washed up on the shore in America, and basically, for some reason, he cannot die. He's cursed for some reason. And every time he dies, he wakes up naked in the nearest body of water. And so he's fascinated with death and basically why he can't die. And so he was a doctor, and they tell you his backstory bits and pieces every other episode. And now he's a coroner for the New York City Police Department in modern days. And they kill him off in some episodes, but it's not as gimmicky as it sounds. They don't do it every episode.
Well, that's good.
It's like they do it in the pilot twice so that you get the idea that he can't die. And then it's like two episodes before they do it again.
Mm.
And then every once in a while, they make you think he's going to die again. And then he lives or something happens and he gets saved at the last minute. And sometimes he tries to step in and take a bullet because he knows he can. Mm. And people don't know he can't die. So they try and rescue him kind of thing.
Does he feel pain? Like, does he go through slow, excruciating deaths? Like, it's not superhuman sort of thing.
And he discusses it. And because he's experienced most of these deaths, people slab a body on the morgue table. And he's like, oh, yeah, they died because of this. And they're like, how did you even know that? And he goes, oh, I can tell by this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's kind of scary that you can do that.
Yeah. Is it sort of like Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise? Like, does it hit the reset button or does it?
No. He just wakes up and... His best friend, actually, it's his adopted son, is played by Judd Hirsch from Taxi fame.
Okay.
And he's basically sometime in the 40s, he adopted him, and he stopped aging, but his son grew up to be an old man. And so they have this weird father-son relationship, and he just refers to him as his uncle.
Hmm.
Because so that nobody knows that the old man is actually his son.
Yeah.
Because nobody can know his secret.
Yeah. So does the son know?
Oh, yes. He knows. And every time he dies and he wakes up in a body of water, the old man shows up in a cab or a car to pick him up. And it's like got a blanket and a set of clothes ready for him.
That's kind of cool.
It's very nifty. And there's this really interesting dynamic there that you don't really see in TV. And it's not something you would normally think about.
No, and how does the son know where to pick him up?
It's usually the bay in New York City.
Oh, okay.
That's usually where he wakes up, and he usually wakes up in the same spot. So usually, if for some reason he knows he's dead, there's like a convenience store he hides in while he waits for his ride and pickup, and it's really clever.
Interesting.
And sometimes they do. Not every episode, but some episodes they reference his past. Where they'll tell a story, like he'll meet somebody and it will be an old person that gets murdered and it will actually be somebody he knew 100 years ago or 60 years ago.
Oh,
and
interesting.
They don't do it every episode. That's what I like, is it's not gimmicky where they do that sort of thing every episode,
mm-hmm.
but they do it like every other episode. So you get a little bit of his story and you get a little bit of somebody else's story, and then there's an ongoing story with him where there's somebody that knows his secret and claims to be like him and leaves him notes and memos everywhere.
Mm.
And he's trying to figure out who this person is. And the person hints that he's been around for 1,000 years, not 200.
Oh, interesting.
And so he's paranoid of all the people he meets because somebody knows his secret and he doesn't know who it is.
Hmm. It sounds to me like it's a bit of a twist on Highlander.
Yes.
you know, like it sounds like he was wrongfully murdered for trying to do something just.
Right.
And then has been somehow given a chance to set things right or avenge his death, maybe. I'm interested in the show. I mean, I like it when they take, like, it doesn't have to be completely over the top sci-fi, you know, for me to be on board with something that's a little bit geeky. Like just taking your typical kind of, you know, murder mystery show on what network did you say it was on? NBC?
On ABC.
ABC. And just giving it a little bit of a twist, you know, just enough to suspend disbelief.
It's just enough that is just enough not science fiction and more fantasy, and there's just enough real life like explanation of how people die that you're like, huh, there's like a weird mix of real investigative stuff and weird sci-fi stuff to keep you interested.
Yeah, that's what I liked about Once Upon a Time when I first started watching it, is that the first couple seasons would only just hint at the magic. You know, they would be very, very subtle. It would be, well, that could be magic, or that could just be happenstance, or that could just be technology. Like, I mean, it really wasn't clear until they get into, like, the third season where, like, everybody was transported through a portal into, like, Never Never Land, and they really tried to push this crazy other world as opposed to just flashbacks, and it really flopped for me. You know, it could have been just the budget. It could have been just the way they handled it, but I really felt that they did better at the subtleties than they did at doing these grand standing moments, you know, with worlds colliding.
Right. I liked when that show was telling the story in the town and occasionally something would collide with the other world. Mm-hmm. But when they started sending people over, it just felt like,
well, and
they didn't have the budget for what they were trying.
No, and if you want to do it these days, and that's really probably what the biggest issue was for me too, is if you're going to do something like that these days, you better have the budget of Game of Thrones. Like, if you're going to push people into a completely made-up world, you've got to make sure that people believe it, right? And I mean, people that watch Game of Thrones, like, it's all filmed on this planet, but not once do you look at that show and go, huh, I wonder where they shot that. You know, you go, hey, well, that's the Eastern Kingdoms, or that's the, you know, Westeros, or that's the North. Like, you don't even care that it's probably Norway or wherever, right? Ireland, you know?
Right.
You completely get lost in it. And if you can't do that, you know, and a lot of primetime shows don't have those kind of budgets, then it's not really all that good. I mentioned last week that I think The Flash is doing a good job of kind of not making you question what city it is that they're filming this in, and keeping kind of things at a pace where you're more interested in the story and then in the just the mythos, like in the made up world that they're trying to present. I don't know. I feel like there's just a lot of subtlety that television lately is taking for granted.
Yeah.
And too many people are trying to beat you over the head with plot points. I mean, I'm still watching The West Wing. I'm almost done the series, and so I'll report on it once I've watched the whole thing. It's something that I've just not been able to tear myself away from, so I haven't really watched a whole lot of other things. Because whenever I've got like a meal break or a dinner break, I take the 45 minutes and just watch an episode. So slowly but surely, I'm plugging through. And same thing with Gotham is that I'm very interested in it because at first it kind of smacked you over the head, but quickly with the second episode that I watched, it steered away from, we have to do everything all at once in 45 minutes. And, so I'm looking forward now to catching up with the next couple episodes of Gotham, and hopefully Gotham takes the route that Forever takes, is that they don't. Like, I don't want to see Bruce Wayne every episode.
I won't say you do see, I will, not to spoil anything, you do see Bruce Wayne every episode.
Mm-hmm.
But they begin to explain his beginnings as Batman.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think they were going to touch that.
I didn't either. They're on, what, like episode 6 now or 7?
Is it really that many? I thought it was only 4.
It's more than that. It's like 6 or 7
Oh,
now.
Really? I'm way behind.
And I think it's episode like 4 and 5. Alfred is trying to coax Bruce out of the house, and he's like, "No, I'm investigating things." And it's like he's stealing. He's bribed people to bring him case files from his parents' murder and stuff, and he's like doing research on where people were the night of his parents' death and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And Alfred's like, "We need to get you out of the house. You need to socialize." And he's like, "No, this is fun." And you're like, "Oh, wait, he really is Batman. Okay, I get it."
Nice. Interesting.
And they do some interesting dynamics with that.
Okay.
And the Penguin stuff gets really good recently too.
Yeah, so the second episode had quite a bit of the Penguin in it. And at the moment, he kind of is the Joker of the story. Like, he's the psychopath. You know, the things that he's doing reminds me of the things that the Joker would do. Where for me, the Penguin in, I guess, a classic Batman kind of canon has always been the mob leader, but had the henchmen do all the dirty work.
Right, and then this is him kind of having to do the dirty work.
Yeah, which, I mean, I understand because it's supposed to be his kind of beginnings, I guess. Do you think they're ever going to touch on Joker? Because the Joker is a younger, I guess, villain in compared to the others. So I guess he wouldn't really come around until Batman's like a full-fledged
thing. I don't think they will touch basically the Joker, but they do touch other villains.
Mm. I wonder if that's because of the Superman Batman films and the other DC film plans, is that perhaps we're going to see the Joker as one of the villains, you know, obviously not Superman v Batman, but like I would say, like, speculating down the line as far as Justice League is concerned, I'm wondering what kind of obstacles the Justice League is going to have to go up against, whether it's going to be, you know, a Lex Luthor Joker combo, you know, like pick different bad guys from the different stories.
In all honesty, I think they're going to be too afraid to approach Joker in just the sheer fact that it was just done in the... Mm-hmm.
The Nolan films, yeah.
The Nolan films. Yeah. And I don't think anybody wants to try and duplicate the Heath Ledger's performance of the Joker.
No.
I think movie studios and TV networks would be too afraid to even approach that.
Yeah. Is it Adrian Brody? Was he the guy from The Piano?
Yes.
Yeah. I always thought he would make a really good Joker.
Definitely. I know that there was even talk at one point that he might play the Joker years and years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I don't remember hearing that.
I think it was around the time Heath Ledger was cast. I think he was one of the other suggestions that the studio was trying to find.
It's so funny how everybody rants and raves about this stuff. You know, like, the comic book fans just throw their arms up at these casting, you know, notes before they even see the film. And I remember the heat that Heath Ledger got. And I was just like, well, okay, sure. Like, I guess, you know, I kind of reserved my judgment. I mean, I knew he was a good actor. I've seen him in other things. They were always pretty shiny. I don't remember him in anything dark. But then when I saw the first picture of Heath Ledger as the Joker, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, this could be very interesting. Even just talking about it with you now makes me want to go watch that movie.
Yeah, that's, you know, one of those movies that anytime someone brings it up, I'm like, oh, wait, I got to go find it.
Yeah, yeah. So the big one for me this week was finally getting around to watching the Star Wars Rebels premiere. Have you seen this?
I have not. Yeah. I only saw the trailer thing that they put up.
Yeah, like, which is the first 6 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't impressed by that, so I'm hoping that this is better.
Yeah, well, here's the one. I mean, here's the major complaint that nobody our age is going to be able to get out of their heads, probably for the duration of this season, is that it looks like Aladdin in space. Like, I find it so hard to believe that it's a Disney XD Lucasfilm production. Like, Disney now owns Lucasfilm. And right. How did nobody catch the fact that Ezra, the main kid, looks like Aladdin, talks like Aladdin, is a street rat like Aladdin? Like, the only thing missing from the first 6 minutes when he steals fruit from a vendor is a song.
That's a very good point.
You know, like, it really smacks me in the face. Now, I'm part of the generation that watched Aladdin like 100 times over as a kid. So I mean, there's just
myself is included.
Yeah,
in that.
So I mean, like that kind of stuff. Like you just, it's just burned into my brain. So maybe there's other people that haven't seen it as much as I have, but yeah, it really did not sit well with me when I first saw that 6 minutes. I mean, everything else looked cool. I mean, I was excited for the era, right? I mean, right. You're talking about it's post episode 3, but pre episode 4. So the Emperor has won. Vader is a force in the universe. There are Imperial stormtroopers everywhere. Like it is full on kind of, there's not even a rebellion. The idea is that the rebellion is just starting in this series.
Right.
And man, do they ever do a good job overall. The first episode was 45 minutes, so it was like an hour-long special. And I think other subsequent episodes are just 22. So I haven't seen the other ones, but I've heard good things. I really enjoyed it. It really picks up after that first 5 to 10 minutes. And the thing that really gets you are the environments, the sound, and the music. Everything else is kind of typical kids cartoon premiere. They kind of establish, well, here's the team of five. There's the strong guy. There's the pilot. There's the techie girl. You know, there's the droid. There's an astromech droid.
Yeah.
You know, like all that kind of stuff. So that kind of stuff is not, it's not bad. It's just unimaginative as far as Star Wars is concerned. And it doesn't feel... That makeup doesn't really feel like Star Wars. That feels like insert kids cartoon here. Like, you know, it feels like Transformers Prime or it feels like Ninja Turtles. You know, like this.
Right.
It feels like that kind of a formula. I enjoy the fact that there are at least a couple of female characters that are strong in it. They're actually two of my favorite in terms of both their personalities, the character development, and their character design. Hera is the Twi'lek pilot. And Sabine is a humanoid, I guess. And she's like a demolitions person. She likes to blow stuff up.
Hey, that works.
Yeah, she's the techie one. And I mean, like right away, she's probably a couple years older than Ezra. So Ezra's got a crush on her. She's supposed to obviously be like the love interest sort of thing. But they have good voice acting. They've got, you know, good design. The Twi'lek is green. Like they've broken a couple of the molds as far as that goes.
Right.
But everything else was just kind of... you know, as far as the characters were concerned, we're kind of cookie cutter. There is a lead guy on the ship, and you can tell right away that he's kind of the authority. And I like him. He's a good character. I feel like they kind of jumped the gun with him, though. I guess I can... Do you worry about spoilers at all?
It doesn't bother me at all.
So, I mean, it's been out for a few weeks. It's almost a month old. So, I mean, heads up, folks. If you haven't watched it, you might want to just plug your ears for a minute. But in the first episode, they reveal that one of the elite guys on the ship of, you know, kind of vagabonds is a Jedi. And I was just like, well, okay, there was bound to be one or two. But, like, could you have not just left that until, like, mid-season or later on? Like, why reveal to the Empire that he's a Jedi and he survived right now?
They hyped that when the show was in preliminary production.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I thought we were going to get a show without Jedis. Like, I thought we were going to get, like, the Emperor and Vader, sure. But I thought we were going to be able to see bounty hunters and smugglers and Imperial agents and stormtroopers and just the other side of Star Wars without the lightsabers and the Force just all the time, right?
Right.
Because that's what Clone Wars was about. And so, yeah, I was a little disappointed that they jumped the gun. The guy I can't remember his name. I'm going to get IMDb up here because I'm embarrassing myself.
Isn't it Freddie Prinze Jr.? It is
Freddie Prinze Jr. It's a... Kanan Jarrus is the guy's name. I was trying to remember the character's name. And he's cool. Like he's a good character. It's just that what they've got him doing in the first episode kind of turned me off. And there's a bunch of other great voice actors. I mean, Vanessa Marshall plays Hera. Steve Blum plays Zeb. He's the muscle. And Steve Blum is in everything.
Everything.
Everything that you've seen on TV in the last 15 years. He's played multiple characters on it.
I think he's played Captain America at one point. I think he's also played Hawkeye in another Avengers series somewhere.
Yeah.
He's done everything.
Yeah. Jason Isaacs is another really good actor, and he is the Inquisitor. They get a glimpse of who I'm assuming is a Sith in the end of this episode. Mm-hmm. And I've seen pictures on the website, like of the Star Wars website, where him and Kanan is, or Kanan? Is it, maybe it's Kanan. I guess him and Kanan are like they're fighting with their lightsabers. I'm just like, well, didn't we just do this? Like, didn't we just see this in Clone Wars? So, I mean, I've got high hopes for the series because overall, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the Inquisitors and Agents, they're both classes from the Old Republic video game, and I thought that was kind of neat that they slipped those in. I feel like the music and the sound, like you really, there's nothing like watching a TIE fighter scream by. You know, the sound of the twin ion engines, the double blasters on the front that make that funny kind of like hissing noise, like it is just bang on. Like they're really not pulling any punches, you know, for that kind of stuff. You know, when, you know, there's those moments where it's like, hey, our comms aren't working. Uh-oh, that means we're probably being in just before someone says jammed, like a Star Destroyer comes out of hyperspace. Like, just stuff like that. You're just kind of like, yes, Star Wars is on TV.
Yeah, this is what I wanted.
Yeah, like it is. So once we got up into space and there was like the dogfight with what looks like a kind of a Corellian freighter that's modified, and it just, like, that stuff was fantastic. It's only just the Jedi stuff that kind of put me off, you know, and it suffers from the same sort of thing that most premieres suffer from that we were mentioning earlier about kind of beating you over the head. However, I can kind of forgive it because it's a kid's cartoon. Like, all kids' cartoons do that. They kind of have to.
And a lot of TV does it with their pilots because they got to sell it to executives.
Yeah.
And executives don't really care. They're like, what's the gimmick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can I sell this in 30 seconds in an elevator?
Right.
Yeah. I enjoyed the animation. I really like the design of most of the stuff. I mean, the ships and the space stuff all looks great. The characters look pretty good for the most part, but the animation was a little stiff in some places and not in others. And I think that, I mean, I don't want to lay down judgment because I think it just might have been my connection at the time when I was watching it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to kind of slam on it too much because there were some really good scenes, especially with the person that was animating the big heavy guy, Eb, I think his name is, or Zeb. He was like, his fight scenes were pretty cool. Like when he punches someone, it really looks like he slams them. It's pretty cool in that way. There were Wookiees in it and that sort of stuff was okay. It's got the same sort of angled design that Clone Wars had, but with some softness to it. Like it's not quite as harsh. So it definitely distinguishes itself from the visual design of Clone Wars, but still has the same sort of universal feel. And obviously a good portion of that I would think would be for being able to produce a TV show with this kind of scope to keep the budget down.
But didn't the Clone Wars borrow from the Cartoon Network that series that was done by, I want to say his name is Trinovsky?
Yeah.
That did Samurai Jack. Isn't that where they got the Clone Wars art style from?
Yeah, so what it was is Star Wars Clone Wars, which is that 2D animated one you're talking about, then spun off into Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Right.
And they actually tie in. Like, there's a point near the end of The Clone Wars where you can actually start interjecting different episodes from the other series. The timelines start to overlap. Because the very last thing that happens in the 2D animated one ties directly into episode 3, the film.
Okay.
Yeah, like the last scene in Star Wars Clone Wars is Grievous kidnapping the Palpatine and taking off into orbit over Coruscant. And the opening scene in the movie is Obi-Wan and Anakin rescuing him.
Right.
Like it's like hours later, which I thought was really cool at the time. And it still is. I mean, it just, those cartoons came out when the movie came out. And then, I mean, 6 years of the Clone Wars is what happened on the Cartoon Network. So,
right.
So yeah, I like I said, I'm looking forward to the point when I can start to forget about Aladdin, because
it'll take a couple episodes.
Yeah. Well, like the kid. I mean, the kid even looks like he's got some sort of ethnic descent. know, as far as his background and facial features, the color of his hair. Like, I mean, all he needs is a little red hat. You know, it's a little bit much. And he's supposed to be force sensitive. Like this Kanan guy is going to take him in, looks like, and maybe train him as a Padawan, which never turns out well. I don't know why they tried to do this. So yeah, what I want, and especially because I heard about it on the internet, is that apparently there was an extended version of the premiere, which I thought I was going to be able to see, where Darth Vader makes an appearance.
Really?
And James Earl Jones is reportedly returning to voice him.
Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that will make my year.
I think that will make a lot of people's year.
Yeah, like I can't wait. Especially, I mean, and not to sound funny, but James Earl Jones is now an older gentleman, and he is just going to have every bit the gravitas that he had before, but people aren't going to have to fake it, because that's always the issue that I have with the movies, is that Vader says something, and then they have to kind of fake the James Earl Jones voice, because they couldn't get him to come back and do it. Well, now, maybe he will.
Right.
And that would be amazing. I hope that rumor's true. But that's my big kind of geek out this week was Star Wars Rebels. I think you should check it out. I'd be curious to hear what you think about it.
I actually saw a DVD for it at my local comic book store the other day. And I was like, I'm tempted to pick this up, but I don't want to pay full price for what is probably one episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted like $25. I was like, I don't know how long this is. I'm not paying $20 for 45 minutes.
No, it's not worth the $20 for 45 minutes. I mean, if it was a couple dollars, I'd say, yeah, go ahead. So have you been doing anything outside of watching stuff? Like, do you have any books on the nightstands that you want to recommend?
I have a book I want to recommend. Full disclosure, I did not pay for this book. It was provided to me by a publisher. I just want to make sure that I'm saying that up front. So I didn't pay any money for this. Though I did offer to pay for the book, and the publisher was like, no, just have it.
That's cool.
It's called The Art of Eating Through the Zombie Apocalypse. It's by Lauren Wilson, and it's illustrated by Kristen Bathis.
It's a great title.
Yes. And I have to say, I've been very surprised by this. Because I've read things like The Zombie Survival Guide,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And this does approach topics with a little bit of humor. But it really is just a book about surviving when, you know, all else fails. Like, this book would be useful to you if you suffered in a hurricane and your power was out for like 3 weeks.
Okay.
Like, there's stuff in here on how to make your own oven so you can cook using supplies you might have around the house, and tips on things that you might want to have set aside in case the power goes out, or how to grow your own vegetables when, you know, you don't have running water and stuff like that. And they make reference to zombies is in like jokes.
Right.
But the rest of the book is very helpful in other ways.
So it's a kind of a survivalist, a modern survivalist guide.
It's like a modernist survivalist. And there's also recipes in like every chapter has like 4 or 5 recipes on things you can make with like odds and ends you might find in the woods, or things that you might have in your house that would go bad as soon as your power goes out.
Mm.
Here's some quick things you can make with things you might have in your kitchen.
Wow.
And it's really interesting. It's really helpful. There is a tool here. I have the book sitting here. I got to look up what it's called. There is a kit thing. It tells you how to make. And it tells you to use like a Altoids tin and like ingredients for things you should put together. And it's called your savory survival tin. And it's got like things on how to make a fire, how to make a fishing line, stuff to make water purification, a multi-tool, things like that. And it's just a bunch of stuff you should put together in a tin. And the stuff in it wouldn't cost you more than maybe $10. And my wife and I already were looking at it and going, you know, we do go hiking once in a while. We should put this in our hiking bag just in case, you know, something happens and it rains and we need to get out of the rain and start a fire or something. Like, it's got all the stuff you'd need to do something like that.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I mean, not enough times do people think about that kind of thing. I mean, like, I don't have a car, and my dad's gone away on vacation, so he's loaned me his vehicle while he's away. I mean, partly so it's just not sitting at his place, you know, waiting to be broken into, but also right. gives me, you know, an easier way to get around. But, you know, before he went, like we went over, it's like, you know, this is where he keeps the first aid kit in the trunk and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, like he had like a couple of ponchos, like rain ponchos.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were the size of an envelope. Like they were just a 4x6 little pouch that he happened to keep in the door of either side of the Kia, you know, and you're just kind of like, that's like, I would never think to do that. With my, I mean, maybe because I don't own a car. I mean, I knew about, I would always have a first aid kit, you know, like, and up here, I mean, in Canada, you'd always want to have a blanket in the trunk in case, you know, you break down somewhere and you got no heat.
Oh, yeah. Same
you know?
Here.
But, yeah, because, I mean, you're in Maine. I mean, same kind of weather. So, yeah, I mean, that kind of thing, the poncho thing is what kind of grabbed me. Same with, like, some of the other car things that he keeps around that, I mean, I can't remember them, but just, like, little gadgets here and there, and they're not really... They're like single purpose just in case you need it, but it's going to be that one time that you need it when you don't have it that you're going to be cursing up a storm. Right. Yeah. But I mean, Dad's always been like that. He's always been like prepared.
Oh, yeah. My wife is like that. We have like a toolbox in the trunk and a bunch of other stuff for different things. Get a couple of dollar store ponchos. So mm-hmm. I understand completely.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what they are. I mean, they look like the kind of thing you throw over yourself at a football game, just, you know, while you're there.
And, they're usually probably one use. They're not worth folding up. You just toss them afterwards.
Yeah, you just recycle. I mean, I think these ones had a recycle symbol on them. So I'm like, hey, that's cool. You can just, you know, maybe dry them off when you get home or just kind of shake them out and then throw them in the recycle bin, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, that's awesome.
It's really helpful. And it's not an expensive book. It's like $15.
Nice.
It's like 300 something pages.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I'm about three quarters of the way through it now.
Yeah. Gadgets like that always really intrigue me. Like I saw something online earlier this year about making like it's like a 40-gallon bucket and turning it into an air conditioner.
Yep. This covers on how to purify water when you don't have a water purifier and things like that, and how to make your own purifier and how to take an ammo box and turn it into an oven. And I was like, I never thought of that.
And I mean, hey, you're going to have ammo on hand if you're dealing with a zombie apocalypse, right?
Right. But it also gives alternatives to that. Like if you don't have an ammo box, here's something you might have in your house or in your car that you could use as an alternative.
Right.
And you're like, I was like, wow, this is actually really helpful. I'm actually going to, the plan is next week to make some of the recipes that are in the book.
Cool.
So.
Yeah. Well, that I want to see how those go and hear how they taste.
There's some really good recipes in there, so.
Interesting. Right on. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is the last part of the show where we bring a couple of quick picks from the internet. It is sponsored by tweakedaudio.com. If you go to tweakedaudio.com and use the code TCC at checkout, you can get 30% off your entire order of high-performance noise-reducing earbuds. They come in 7 different styles and colors. There's mic sets available. They're compatible with all kinds of different audio devices. So visit tweakedaudio.com and use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. My first pick this week, and this is going to be the only one that I do, is another Star Wars reference. It's actually a video that a couple of folks made racing helicopter drones, little remote control drones, through the forest. And they have LED lights in the back of them, like glow sticks. And it really looks like the speeder scene and speeder chase scene from Return of the Jedi with the speeder bikes. And all it needs is just Star Wars sound effects and music. They didn't do that because obviously the copyright, they'd probably take it down off YouTube almost immediately. But it's really cool video to just watch what these drones are capable of. And the people controlling them are doing really, really fun stuff racing them through. They all have crash cams. So the odd time that one of these drones clips a tree, it goes into a spiral of death. And you get to see it in the spiral in its entirety.
Wow, it's really impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty good, right? Yeah, so we'll have the link for that in the show notes, and I'll probably embed the movie right into the show notes on the website. So that's it for me, Lou. What's your pick this week?
I have an interesting pick. I unfortunately will admit this might not be visible for Canadian listeners. Because I don't know if you guys have Hulu up there.
We don't.
Well, Hulu's doing a special for Halloween this year, and they're calling it 13 Nights of Huluween, hosted by Elvira.
And she's still around?
She's still around. It's the same woman and everything.
No kidding.
And she looks fabulous. She's like 70 years old.
She's 70 years old.
And she looks like she's like maybe 40.
Wow.
And it's same woman. She comes out and there's 13 movies and she hosts them. But like a before, middle, and an after, like she used to do on her old show.
Yep.
In the 80s.
Yep.
And then there's little, like they do like the pop-up video thing where they pop up text and it's supposed to be her comments on scenes in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the movies are really dumb. Some of them are like B-movie classics. And they're really funny. I've only watched like part of the first one and part of the second one. I didn't finish them all the way.
Right.
But I was laughing my ass off. So
nice.
They're definitely worth watching if you have access to Hulu.
Yeah. Cassandra Peterson is her real name, and she's 63.
Is she 63? I thought she was 70.
No, not quite. But still, yeah.
And it really is her in the makeup, and they really did just reshoot all this stuff. These aren't like old episodes of her show or anything. This is really
she did this
as a special for Hulu. So
wow, I mean that must have been fun to go back and revisit that character.
They tried to recreate Elvira a couple years ago with a reality TV show, and it never panned out. They were like she was helping pick the next Elvira, and there was no next Elvira. She's the only one.
Yeah, you don't mess with that. Just let it be. It was amazing for what it was, and just move on.
And she's also an interesting person. If you ever want to read about somebody's interesting history, she has a really fascinating history.
Cool.
So
I don't think I knew that. Right on. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com. You can also listen on the TuneIn app. Just download the app and search for Alpha Geek Radio. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. And of course, this episode will be available on demand via iTunes on our website, thecitadelcafe.com. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. And Twitter as well is just my name. Lou, where can people find you online?
Easiest way to find me is at BusyZombieLord on Twitter. And I also co-host Zombies Ate My Podcast at zombiesatemypodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you can find a podcast.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick brains. I will give bonus points, which are worth absolutely nothing, to anybody in the chat that shows up as funky anything. F-U-N-K-Y, whatever you want. Keep it clean. Keep it secret. Keep it safe.